About 6 weeks ago, I took the plunge and got 4 tickets to the opening night of Star Wars. So on Thursday night, I took Chloe and my 2 boys, 12 and 14, to see the opening of Star Wars. Now, I'm not going to spoil any of it for you, but I will tell you this, that part of the pleasure for me, I mean, I think you can go and see the movie having never seen any of the Star Wars and still have an exciting adventure story. But if you, as I did, grew up with these stories and with these characters, the pleasure is intensified because you know what Han Solo is like, and you know who Princess Leia is, and you know the relationship between the characters. And when certain things happen that sort of echo things earlier, you get a little thrill of excitement. Oh, I recognize that. I remember that. So that is a comparison to the experience of Christmas for people who know the scriptural story and people who don't. Of course, it's still a delightful story to have this wonderful baby be brought into the world who's going to do all these wonderful things. And the way it happens, all those narrative details are beautiful in and of themselves. But if you know the whole rich, full story, it's that much more pleasurable, that much more rich. That's part of what we do here at St. Paul's every Advent, and even more than that, with these O antiphons, each of which are images from the book of Isaiah that point to this miracle that happens in Christmas. But all of these are from the book of Isaiah. So we have the day spring from on high, the prince of the Gentiles, the key, the root of Jesse, wisdom, and so forth. Well, today we heard Jim read from a different prophet, Micah. And so today I want to dive into that image from Micah and point out to you how Micah gives us a sense of who this is going to be, gives us a setup to this great story that we're going to be celebrating Thursday evening and Friday morning. So the thing to know about Micah is that Micah is actually a peer of Isaiah. He's part of the first generation of prophets who get written down. So Hosea, Amos, Micah, Isaiah, they're all writing in the 700 BCs in a similar sort of cultural context. So this is the first wave of great prophets. And some of this may be familiar to you. I'd ask you at this point to turn to your pew Bibles, because we're going to be flipping around a little bit. Go to page 756. And in that will be in Micah. Micah is one of the 12 minor prophets. We call them minor just because the books are shorter. There are 4 major prophets: Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel. And then there are these 12 minor prophets. And Micah is one of the early ones. Micah, Amos, Hosea are the early ones. So here we have Micah. He's writing in Jerusalem again around the same time. And on page 756, I can point out to 2 quotes that you may be familiar with. On page 756, chapter 4, verse 3, see if you've heard this before. He shall judge between many peoples and shall arbitrate between strong nations far away. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Have you heard that before? The interesting thing about that quote is that Isaiah has it too, and they're not sure whether Isaiah stole from Micah or Micah stole from Isaiah or they both stole from somebody else. Any of those things are possible, but it's a very early vision. Another thing that you may know from Micah is look opposite page 757, chapter 6, verses 6 to 8. With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body, for the sin of my soul? Okay, that's the setup for the famous quote. He has told you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice, and to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. Have you heard that one? That's another sort of greatest quote. Greatest hit from the Bible, particularly that last piece. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with your God. All right, so Micah is one of the great ones who really articulates important things for the people of God. Now, what we're going to look at is on page 756. It's in chapter 5. And it gives us three different things that point to Jesus in some really profound ways. But before we dig into that, I just want to say a word. I want to pitch that after the first of the year, every Thursday from 6:15 to 7:15, we're going to be reading these minor prophets, working our way through them so that we can understand where they came from and understand the richness of these poetic images, slowly building up in us, a fluency in our mother tongue. The scriptures, this book, is our mother tongue. It enables us to speak the things of God with authority and depth. And what I fundamentally believe is that the world right now needs people like you and me who can be fluent in this language, because the world no longer knows how to speak this language. They need us to read, mark, learn, and inwardly digest things like beating swords into plowshares and doing justice, loving kindness, and walking humbly with our God. One of the images that I've been sharing with you is that you and I together are priests. When we are baptized, we share in Jesus' eternal priesthood, which means that we are stewards of God's mysteries. And among God's mysteries are these words, these images. So if you join me on Thursday evening at 6:15 to 7:15, even for just the first few weeks when I'm going to do a sort of tour of the scriptures and help you crack into this thing in the first place. Among them, of course, among the people that we'll be looking at is this guy, Micah. All right, so here we are, chapter 5, a brief passage, but within this brief passage we have three things that point to Jesus, which of course is why we're hearing it now. Chapter 5, verse 2. But you, O Bethlehem, sound familiar? O little town of Ephratah, who are one of the little clans of Judah. From you, O little Bethlehem, shall come forth for me one who is to rule in Israel, whose origin is from of old, from ancient days. Why Bethlehem? Well, turn with me to page 226. Page 226 puts us in the middle of the book of 1 Samuel, which is one of the great pieces of literature in the scripture. And it tells the story of the prophet Samuel and the one that the prophet Samuel points to, the first very great king of all of Israel, a little guy named David. And on page 226, we get the story of David being anointed king. It begins, "The Lord said to Samuel, 'How long will you grieve over Saul? I have rejected him from becoming king over Israel. Fill your horn with oil and set out. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite.'" All right, so obscure town. The great prophet is sent out to an obscure town, and he's supposed to anoint somebody king. And we get the story of beautiful strapping lad after beautiful strapping lad coming before Samuel and him saying, "Nope, that's not the guy. Nope, that's not the guy. Nope, that's not the guy." And then finally, the most obscure, youngest shepherd, often the corner, the youngest guy, David, comes forth, and Samuel realizes, oh, this is the great king. And so he was, the great king, a flawed human being like all of us, but truly a great king, the great iconic king of Israel. And the belief was, what Micah points to, is that the next great king, the great king, the king who's going to be even greater than David, is also going to come from this town of Bethlehem. And so it came to pass. Now, back on page 756, we continue on verses 3 and 4. "Therefore, he shall give them up until the time when she who is in labor has brought forth. Then the rest of his kindred shall return to the people of Israel. And he shall stand and feed his flock in the strength of the Lord." Pointing to the one who is to come, the word who becomes flesh and dwells among us, is going to be among us like a great good shepherd. Have we heard that somewhere? Well, yes, as a matter of fact. If you will turn to page 872, 872 takes us into the middle of the Gospel of John. And in the Gospel of John is one of the most important images of who Jesus is for us. We're in chapter 10, verse 11, where Jesus says this, "I am," and I'm pausing there because "I am," Jesus very deliberately is echoing the very name of God. "I am who I am, I will be who I will be. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep." You see, in Micah was already pointing to this, that he was going to be a great shepherd, a good shepherd. Here's one thing to know, and I find this fascinating. In the first 400 years of the church, the most common image of Jesus was not Jesus on the cross. The ancient catacombs and ancient churches most often have the image of Jesus as the good shepherd with a lamb slung across his shoulders. The early primal image of who Jesus is and who Jesus is for us is as the good shepherd. And we are the poor, stupid, lost sheep that Jesus rescues. That's who you and I are. We're little lambs, and Jesus rescues us and loves us. Here in Micah, we already have the beginning of that important image of who Jesus is. Finally, the passage concludes, "He shall stand and feed his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they shall live secure, for now he shall be great to the ends of the earth, and he shall be," and this is the third image, "the one of peace," that Jesus comes in peace. Now, this is primally important because the very name of the city where Jesus died and rose again is, well, the ancient church always translated it as the site of peace, and that is Jerusalem, which has to be just one of the greatest ironies and paradoxes of all time, because the city of peace is and always has been in probably, I'm sure will be for all of my lifetime, one of the greatest cities of conflict simultaneously. But God's presence is there. And here's the thing that Jesus reveals, and this haunts me more and more. You've been hearing me preach about this. Jesus never preaches war. Jesus tells his followers, "Put away your sword." He never acts in violence. He has one piece of street theater where he overthrows the money changers at the temple. But he doesn't break anybody's arm when he does that. He's just saying, like, "No, this is not okay. Stop it." But he's not pulling out a sword. Jesus is the Prince of Peace. When he is slapped, he turns the other cheek. He allows himself, despite who he is, to be crucified, and remains silent before the unjust accusations. Jesus embodies all the way into the very core of his being, peace. And so by God's grace becomes the Prince of Peace. That little baby whose birth we remember in just a few days. This season of Advent is the season of yearning, where we yearn for God to come again in our own lives and in the world. And thanks to Micah, when we say God coming into the world, that's not, the word God here has content. It means something specific. And we are the people who are being slowly taught to speak the language of God as our mother tongue. I'll tell you one little story that I heard recently of a preschool teacher in Marin who's a Christian, and she's teaching at a private nursery school. And because of a lesson that she was allowed to give, she said the word God. And she said a third of the children pointed at her and said, "Oh, that's a dirty word. You said a dirty word." And what that revealed was that at home, the only time they heard the word God is in the same kind of context in which they heard the word, and I'm going to say it nicely because we're in church, shucks or fudge. You see, they hadn't heard the word God as something reverent. We here are learning to hear that word with reverence and with content. With content, thanks to Micah, who teaches us that the God we yearn for is the new David, is the good shepherd, and is the Prince of Peace. Thank you, Micah.